Okay, we're going to call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. We do have a quorum to conduct business consisting of myself, Senator McGuire, Senator Mia Costello, and Senator Bill Wilikowski. We're joined today by Senator Johnny Ellis and Senator Berna Gardner, who are also senators from the Anchorage area. The discussion today, and the only item on the agenda, is crime rates in Anchorage. We've got a lineup today consisting, I'll just kind of run through it, Detective Jeff Bell with the APDA, Commissioner Gary Folger with the Department of Public Safety. Both of those gentlemen are in person. On the phone, we'll have Jake Metcalf, who's the Executive Director of PSEA, Chris Aldridge, who's a Correctional Officer 2 at the Anchorage Correctional Complex, and then the mayor has asked to present on behalf of the task force. Then we'll have closing remarks. Members are free to ask questions as they'd like and free to go back and forth between witnesses that testify as well. Yes, Senator Ellis.
Thank you very much for holding the hearing. I just wanted to thank you for listening and responding to our appeal and to just put on the record at the outset that I know that you and the rest of us are cognizant that there are crimes committed all over the state.
Right.
We are concerned about the entire state, not just our community, but we are from the Anchorage area and we've had an uptick and wanted to converse with the folks who are working on this every day. So I wouldn't want anybody to think that we're not cognizant of the problems of domestic violence and crime and dysfunction all over the state. But today, thank you for the focus on the community we represent and getting to the bottom of some of our particular problems that could be a model or instructive for the entire state. So thank you for your leadership.
Absolutely. I appreciate those remarks, and it is unusual to just focus on one particular community. It's the largest community in the state, and the crime rates, you know, are doubling. And all of us here have shared with one another. We've received phone calls, emails, in-person contact from members of our community that are deeply concerned about their safety, their family safety. So we want to look at it and see if there's a way we can partner, of course, at the state level and how to help our community, you know, lower these rates. So Detective Jeff Bell, welcome. And if you just put your name on the record, your affiliation, and then offer your testimony, and then we'll take questions.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Jeff Bell. I'm here representing the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, and I'm currently a detective at the Anchorage Police Department.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I appreciate the invitation to come and get my perspective.
We appreciate you flying here and being here today.
I'll first start by letting you know I'm not a professional speaker, so I'm a little nervous.
Okay.
I apologize for any mistakes I make along the way with the rules and such. I'll first by introducing myself and let you know the background that I have in law enforcement. I've been in law enforcement for 19 years, all of which was done at the Anchorage Police Department. The first 9 or 10 years of my career, I worked the swing shift, the 3 in the afternoon till 1 in the morning, and almost exclusively in the Spinard area. That's where I got my interest in drugs, prostitution, and those type of investigations, because I saw, at least in that part of town, a lot of the activities that I was working, drugs and prostitution were related to that, so I became very interested in working those activities. I was on the Anchorage Police Department SWAT team for 13 years. I left it about a year ago. I was the explosive breacher cadre leader during my time as on the SWAT team. For the last 5 years prior to becoming a detective, I worked in what's called the Special Assignment Unit. The Special Assignment Unit is essentially the gang unit. It's not called the gang unit because they have many other duties besides just investigating gang crime. They investigate street-level drugs, investigate high-risk search warrants, high-risk arrest warrants, and any other problem of the day type activity that comes along. The main reason that those officers are used is because of their high level of training and skill as SWAT officers, and also they can be shifted to any days off, any work hours, and that type of thing. So they can be moved around the city at any hour and any shift to combat those crimes.
Okay. Is sex trafficking a part of what you do?
No.
Okay.
For 3 of the years that I was in the Special Assignment Unit, I also was a Safe Streets Task Force officer at the FBI, working gang crimes, drug investigation and violent crimes. In fact, almost two of those years that I was there, I was the co-investigator of the Israel Keyes serial killer case. I am currently a crimes against children detective investigating sex crimes and abuse crimes against children 15 or under.
Wow.
And I'm the vice president of the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. My capacity here today.
Chicky is joining us.
Okay. I'm hoping to give you a perspective today of a person who kind of worked in the trenches during the last 5 or 6 years when we experienced a pretty drastic change in policing philosophy at the Anchorage Police Department.
You said 3 to 5 years. Can you be even more specific for us?
I can tell you that the philosophy, and actually I don't know if the philosophy has changed, but by necessity because of staffing, the way that street level drugs and the special assignment unit and the vice unit is conducting their business today is different out of necessity because there's less people doing it.
Okay. So would you say between 3 and 5 years, you would say 4 years, 3.5 years?
It was a slow reduction. So as our cycles at the police department rotate from shifts, so we do quarterly shifts of staffing to patrol and those kind of things. So as our numbers dwindled at the Anchorage Police Department, slowly people were removed from the vice unit, the special assignment unit, and those things. So in fact, in 2010, we had 17 officers in the vice unit, which is the detective unit that investigates higher level drug investigations that take more than a day or two to investigate. If there's an informant or something that you need to do several buys into several different people, the detective vice unit would do it.
Okay.
The special assignment unit back then, or the gang unit, had 18 bodies in it in 2010. And respectively, right now, the vice unit has 5 bodies in it. I'm not going to differentiate whether there's detectives, sergeants, temporary assignments, those kind of things. And the SAU, the special assignment unit, is down to 7 people in it.
Okay.
And so kind of what's happening to those units is they have become...
2 seconds here. So vice unit went from 18 to 5.
17 to 5.
17 to 5. And the special...
assignment unit went from 18 bodies to 7.
There we go. Okay. Just wanted to get that
I'm
on.
I'm using the numbers from the PERF report that was done back in 2010. And the numbers of today I actually got by walking into those units in the last few days and counting the people.
Excellent.
And so just to kind of clarify the responsibilities and the difference between those two units, the vice unit, again, high-level, multi-buys. The special assignment unit does mostly one-time buys by bus is what we call them.
Okay.
And so we've gone from essentially a very proactive drug enforcement to a very reactive department and only responding to calls that are called in by the public. I think one of the main reasons that I was...
Senator Wilikowski? And by the way, you're doing great.
Sorry?
You're doing great, and I don't want you to feel like there's some professional qualification for it. We're so pleased that you're here today. But if it's okay with you, we'd like to interrupt with questions.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
And I also want to thank you for holding this hearing, Madam Chair. This is a really important issue for people in my community. And thank you for your testimony. Thank you for coming down and devoting your day to this. When you talk about proactive drug enforcement, can you just explain what that means without giving away any secrets of what you do and why that's effective and maybe how it's been diminished by losing some bodies that you've lost?
Sure. Well, drug investigations, drug reports generally aren't called in by citizens.
Okay.
So, we get citizens calling in about somebody driving down the road that looks like they're smoking a marijuana cigarette or some other type of drug. But generally, drug investigations are officer-initiated activities. In other words, that's what we call them OIs. And so most of the drug investigations are done by police officers either stopping a car and conducting the investigation either because they smell marijuana or they suspect some other drug, or from one of these units, either the vice unit or their special assignment unit, developing informants and using those informants to purchase drugs, or what we've done, we used to do, in the past, and they probably still do them when they get the time, is we used to do what's called jump outs. And so when we didn't have an informant, we would essentially go to areas of Anchorage, parking lots. Like, we didn't have Walgreens then, but that's a good example because it's a public place. The Salvation Army, Diamond Center, Fred Meyer, those kind of things. And we would basically sit in, some of our unit would sit in undercover vehicles, usually DUI, asset forfeiture vehicles, and they would observe the parking lot for what looked like drug deals to them. And a drug deal is pretty easy to spot. You can do it. It happens every half hour in Anchorage in most of those parking lots where you can sit there, you can see a person that approaches, parks a car, approaches one vehicle, gets in the passenger side or the back seat for a few minutes, and then goes back to the to that vehicle.
You said every half hour?
Well, I'm just paraphrasing it. In my experience, when we were there, we were able to go to these parking lots, and if we didn't see something in, say, that amount of time, we just moved to another parking lot. And so the reason that the way we were able to develop that was happening is was we would take these informants, and we would try to use them to purchase drugs, and the locations that they were doing to set up these drugs were fairly common. They were these places.
Okay.
And so that's how we knew we could go to these locations and look for drug buys. And back when we were doing that, I mean, those kind of things are learned behaviors. And so the drug dealers figure out whether there's enforcement or not based on whether they see the white expeditions and the undercover vehicles swarming in on vehicles in those type of parking lots. That's how you discourage that type of activity, is to make sure that you're there on a fairly regular basis so that the public and the drug dealers know that it's happening. And that's what's not occurring now. It's not happening often enough for it to discourage that behavior.
Interesting. Questions, Senator Machicki?
You may have covered this, Madam Chair. I was kind of focused on the rape statistics here, and it talks about forcible rape definition changing for 2013. Can you explain how the rape definition has changed?
They changed the definition of the penetration portion of it, more defined the penetration, however slight. I can tell you in some, and there's always a discussion sometimes on what is penetration.
Right.
And so that has been in the past a difficult definition to, if it's digital penetration, how far is penetration? So those, it clarified that more.
So follow up, please,
yes,
Madam Chair. If you adjusted 2013 with the old definition, was there an increase?
Yes. I mean, there's an increase with the new definition. I believe that there's it's a slight increase from the chart that I remember seeing from
the old definition.
I think that if you go to the 2013 annual statistical report, you'll see both. So you'll see the increase with the old definition line, and then the increase, the drastic increase, or what looks like a drastic increase with the new definition. So both of those numbers are available on that.
So it went from 303 forcible rapes in 2012 to 408. And we will ask for that follow-up to just compare, as Senator Machicki is asking, under the old definition, what would it be? I support the new definition. I think you probably do, too. But it's a valid question. Senator Machicki?
Madam Chair, I mean, it went from an average of around 280 to 408 of those 4 years, 2009 to 2012.
Yep.
So thank you.
I think one of the main reasons I was called here today was to talk a little bit about the shootings, the recent shootings and homicides in Anchorage. I'm not going to use a lot of statistics. I'm not going to use the UCR. You're probably going to hear plenty of that later, those type of statistics. The information that I'm giving you today, I gathered based on either going to the units themselves, talking to the detectives or the sergeants that work in those units, and the annual report that's put out by APD.
Okay.
And the numbers that I chose to use for some of the demonstrations I have are actually the actual arrest numbers by APD, and I believe that that's an effective way of measuring how productive we are in doing some of those crimes. We've had 33 shootings, 10 adult homicides. All of these homicides are believed to be drug-related. I talked to the detectives, and the 10 adult homicides that we have right now, all 10 of them are believed to be drug-related.
Okay.
Of the 10, 7 of the homicides, marijuana was the primary drug associated. And so, but I want to be careful in, I'm not saying that marijuana was the cause of the homicide, but the drug was either found or in some way associated with that homicide. In 4 of those homicides, the homicide occurred during what's called a drug rip. So 4 of those homicides were actually people agreeing to meet in locations such as the one we all saw in the paper this morning in the Walmart parking lot, agreeing to purchase a drug or sell a drug. And in 4 of those instances, that went bad where one person either didn't have the drugs they promised to deliver, or the person that was coming there to buy it didn't want to pay for it and took the drug. Of those 4, 2 of them were marijuana sales.
Okay.
Or purchases.
Senator Costello.
Thank you, and thank you again for being here. So have you followed what other states' experiences are as they've legalized marijuana, and is there any trend that we can expect?
I personally haven't followed that, and I think that I'm not sure that we can predict what trend's going to happen here.
Yeah.
Based on that, even on other states, to be honest with you.
Well, and the interesting question is black market versus being regulated. So, and maybe that's a follow-up hearing for us to think about is, you know, we're facing the question of implementing the voters initiative, which is 1 ounce to possess and buy and sell by an adult, you know, 21 and older. And lots of speculation about how that will impact the community. People have arguments on both sides, and one of the things I'd like to understand, clearly what's happening here is black market related, because the licensing board has not issued regulations related to licensing yet. They haven't gone through that process. So there still is no legal sale and purchase of marijuana in the state of Alaska. So I think it would be interesting for us to look at how states and their crime rates have changed with regulation versus illegalization and black market. I mean, we know that drugs exist no matter what, and that doesn't mean we legalize all drugs, but it's a question in marijuana of where the crime rates move. So is that something that you could help us with in the future?
I could do a little research and
okay.
help. I mean, I think that marijuana has generally been a low priority compared to other drugs.
Okay.
Already, because of the, you know, the Raven decision and the 4 ounces in the house and that kind of thing. So, I think that it's going to be difficult to tell what's going to change when we legalize it. I mean, there's obviously going to be other enforcement. It may not be law enforcement, but there's also going to be other enforcement activities that have to happen with the licensing
right.
and all of that kind of stuff. So it's
a great point.
It's going to be interesting.
Okay.
So kind of what I was getting at with, I kind of started with the drug stuff. I think based on what I just gave you on the information on those homicides is what the common theme in those homicides was drugs.
Okay.
What I talked about just prior to that was essentially the having or more of our drug units. And so we've taken our vice unit and our special assignment unit, made them, kind of a term around the department is combat ineffective. You know,
okay.
if there's so few people in those units that if anybody's at training or sick or something like that, they aren't able to perform a drug buy safely. With 5 or 6 people, you can't do. You have to have somebody that maintains the informant, somebody watches the person with the informant, and then at least enough officers to effect arrest safely. And you can't do that with those numbers. A good example is what we've done recently with the these shootings is they've developed a task force. Well, the task force essentially consists of what's left over of the special assignment unit and what's left over of the vice unit, and some of our CAP members, our CAP team members,
okay.
Community Action Policing Team doing that. So what we've done is taking a 2 units that used to do this very effectively and now using the remnants of both of those to what call a task force and do the same thing that what they were doing. And the information that I heard most recently put out was that when the spike or the uptick stops, we'll stop the task force. Well,
Wow.
If we stop a task force that's doing this, then the learned behavior will come back. Then the only way you keep people from running red lights, from selling drugs, is to keep pressure on them. And that's what the special assignment unit and the vice unit used to do, is keep pressure on them. And you know what's interesting about that is you're not going to see those numbers in the UCR, because we don't report what we don't know. We don't know how many crimes were prevented by us being proactive and interjecting with these drug buys. So there's just no way of measuring that, so it doesn't get measured, and you can't put that out.
Fantastic. Senator Costello was saying UCR, Uniform Crime Rate?
Uniform Crime Report by the FBI. It's what's generally used by politicians to have numbers out there.
I'm going to turn to Senator Machicki, but before I do, can I ask you just specifically, why is it that we don't see those numbers turning up in the UCR?
Prevented crimes?
Okay.
Because you can't measure what you've prevented. We don't know. I mean, an officer who stops somebody and arrests them for DUI, we don't know if you've prevented them from killing somebody 5 minutes later, so those aren't measured. Now, clearly, if we arrest more people, stop more people for DUIs, the logic would be that we prevented something from happening, potentially. Assault.
Right.
You just can't measure that, and you can't put it in numbers. So, I mean, that might be why those units get, you can't statistically measure what they've done other than by arrest. I have some of those numbers, the way arrests have happened with the drug units in the last few years. I'd like to share them with you.
I would like you to. I'm going to go to Senator Machicki, but I absolutely get your point. I just wanted you to solidify that. Senator Machicki.
So actually, on the UCR index crimes, this chart you provided, seems like it is trending upward. So you showed the mean of 2009 to 2012 is 12,578 crimes. So you've had a 14% increase in 2013 over the mean of the past 4 years, but an 11% increase from 2012 alone. And those, of course, the big increases are in forcible rape, burglary, and larceny theft. Mm-hmm. What do you attribute those increases to?
So I'll get back to the drug numbers. I appreciate that question. It was going to come up. I do want to address a little bit about the property crimes, which is what you want, a couple of them that you just mentioned, the burglary, larceny, and theft. And again, I did my research by going to these units, talking to the supervisors, and talking to the detectives. According to the property crime supervisor, 85 to 90% of all property crimes, there's some type of drug nexus to it. These people are committing these crimes so that they can support the habit of drug use. In 2014, the APD disbanded its theft unit, and so there are no longer thefts detectives assigned to theft. They've reassigned those detectives to other crimes against children is one of them, adult sex crimes is another, and cyber crimes is another. And they've shifted those responsibilities to the burglary unit. And one of the interesting things that I found out when I was there, I'd heard that we had a floor on what theft crimes were being assigned. The number that I heard was $10,000. I asked if that was true, that we had a floor of $10,000 on thefts that were being assigned to detectives, and told yes. So if you have a theft and the value of the property that was taken is under $10,000, it's not being assigned to a detective to be investigated, even if there's suspect information. So what's happening with those crimes is that the officer who responds to the initial report is obligated to do the follow-up on those crimes. So previously, when we had a theft unit, crimes that were felony level, $750 now or more, those crimes went to the theft unit. That sergeant then would assign those cases to his detectives to be investigated.
Okay, important point. Senator Machicki, follow-up, and Senator Coghill has returned.
Thank you.
Just a quick follow-up. Perhaps the press maybe could turn their cameras off for the news that just got out that there were no longer charging some of the crimes that seem to have the largest uptick.
just to clarify, I'm sorry, it's not charging. So they're not being assigned to a detective to investigate. All right, if there's an arrest made, if the patrol officer arrests somebody for that crime, then that gets to the DA, and of course charges would be filed if there's probable cause.
Well, and on a follow-up, and you're right, I mean, but that's the point of this hearing, is that often what we do as lawmakers and as a society is we'll focus on something, sex trafficking as an example, we'll build up the resources toward that, but we might cut or neglect other areas, and that's what we're trying to do here today. We're not embarrassed about what the results are. We want to know what they are. And that, I appreciate the candor, knowing, you know, the specialized arrest unit's gone from 18 to 7. The gang unit's gone from 17 to 5. There's no longer a theft-specific investigation unit unless it meets that $10,000 property threshold. That's important for us to understand. So I appreciate it.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Machicki.
That's my point exactly. Yeah. And as we cut different things, I mean, residents, citizens have an expectation of essential services, right? Public safety is one of them. And the more we try to sort of reduce funding, thinking these issues are going to magically go away, we're going to start seeing these increases, and we're going to see trends that we don't like to see. So it's just something we need to keep in mind, that's for sure.
Excellent point.
I think it's just a perfect example of how low staffing levels have gotten. I mean, when staffing levels drop to the point that they have, our administration has to make a decision on, they have to prioritize whether you have 400 officers or 300 officers. Somebody has to make decisions about what gets investigated and what the priority is. And so you have homicides and robberies, assaults and sex crimes against kids, sex crimes against adults, all of those other crimes to consider. And so that's where theft fell in that prioritization.
Okay, one other point you made that I thought was really relevant. You said even if there is a report, so if it's, let's say it's $2,000, you said even if there is a criminal activity report, you mentioned some type of a report that normally was a trigger.
Well, no. Prior, when we had a theft unit, the sergeant that was in charge.
The suspect report.
Yeah, so he gets the report, he reads it. If it's a felony, if it meets felony level, sometimes those investigations didn't happen either. If you read the report and there was no suspect information, it was a smash and grab at a park where a stereo was taken out and there was no evidence, there's no physical evidence to investigate, then that would probably be one even then that wouldn't be investigated. But now that we have this floor of dollar amount on a investigation, there just isn't enough detectives to investigate those crimes, so they're not being investigated or assigned. Okay, I want to go back to a couple numbers. I know you like numbers. I did the drug arrests for 2010. I got this information from the person who keeps statistics for the police department.
Okay.
In 2010, we had 914 arrests, drug-related. 245 of those were for sales or manufacturing of drugs. So it was some type of drug sales, or they held the appropriate amount to be considered manufacturing, so they were charged with that. In 2014, we had 397 arrests for drug-related crimes. 67 of those were for sales and manufacturing. I think this highlights the importance of having those drug units investigating those crimes. Now, I can't equate that less arrests means we're not going to have homicides or we're not going to have robberies, but it a matter of sense, if you're keeping pressure on those type of people doing those type of activities, we might catch one or two of those up in one of these drug charges where they wouldn't be. But you can't put a number on that because you can't keep track of prevented crimes. So we don't know what we would have prevented had we been able to continue making those arrests.
Excellent. Senator Costello and then Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And just yesterday I was reading an article about a program that some police departments are using, which is a predicting crime algorithm, and I think the LA Police Department is using that. Can you talk about what you know about that?
I, honestly don't know much about that. I'm not sure if that's even something that we've considered there. I mean, I know we're just trying to get to the proactive community policing theory of policing in Anchorage.
It's an interesting point because you're inferring it based on your, I guess I would say, local and traditional knowledge of your time in the on the beat. Mm-hmm. You get it. And so I appreciate that. But what Senator Costello is talking about is something very interesting to think about in the future. Senator Gardner.
Thank you. And thank you also for me for being here, taking the time, making the effort. We have this historical crime trends that's from Anchorage, and there is no category for drug crimes. So we can't really compare drug crimes from 2004 to 2008 to crimes later on. Are those crimes embedded in theft larceny, or is this a category that could be on its own and we're just missing it on this sheet?
I'm not sure where you got that sheet, but what I tried to offer to you was the arrest for drug crimes. Now, I didn't get the reports, so there are probably reports of drug crime where there was no arrest. It could be an information report where there wasn't enough probable cause to arrest somebody. Get the attention of the vice or the special assignment unit by creating a report that says at this location there's been drug activity, this person or a neighbor reported this, so that there are those type of drug reports. But I thought it more I thought it would highlight more what we were doing based on outcomes.
And to be clear, Mr. Bell, Sergeant Bell, what Berta, Senator Gardner is referring to is this report, and we'll have Genevieve, would you give him a copy? This is issued by the mayor's task force. So it would not have been a chart that you are familiar with. Okay, further questions, Senator Machicki?
I do have a question. So we're not really talking about the obvious as much as I'd like to, and you're not alone. I represent the Kenai Peninsula, and Commissioner Folger is here as well. And substantial uptick in drug-related crimes. And, you know, when you look at your UCR index and that increase, I would assume, so you talked about drug-related murders this year, everything but forcible rape, those increases are likely related to
definitely
drug activity.
I think with our sex crimes, I think you'll see in those, again, there's a 2013 statistical report on the Muni's website. I think 50% or so of those crimes are alcohol-related. Mm. Maybe 10 or 12 of those 12% are both, and then a smaller percentage is drugs only.
Okay. Let me continue that question, though, if I may. So, substantial effect on security in our communities related to drug activity.
Absolutely.
So the question I have is, what do you have a single program in mind that's underfunded that can make a serious dent in the typical Alaska community on what we're seeing for increasing trends in drug-related crimes?
I think that, no, that's your answer. I don't have a specific plan for an organization or something that you all can do. I mean, this my level of knowledge on this is as a beat person, somebody that worked this, and the bottom line is we have to have enough people, more staffing, to proactively make these arrests. I mean, I wish we knew how much crime was prevented by proactive policing, but we just don't, and so those type of things get cut because you can't substantiate them.
Well, and if I might, part of what you're describing are specific cuts to specific units that have essentially what Senator Machicki's referring to, you know, a singular focus. So the gang unit, the special arrest unit, the idea behind those property crimes, etc., I would assume is to crack down on those specific issues. And maybe you could tell us, I'll go to Senator Costello next, but maybe you could tell us in the, for example, the gang unit, do you get specialized training? Is there additional time that you take? At one point, you were 17 officers. Now you're down to 5. I would assume there's additional training, additional teaching, probably additional intel.
Yeah. So okay. The way things used to work when I was in the unit, in the special assignment unit, we had a gang intel officer who actually sat in our unit, and he gathered all the intel on the gang units. And then they had weekly meetings with probations, Department of Corrections, McLaughlin Youth Center, school resource officers, AST, and they then would share information. And so back in those days, because of the identification and monitoring of the drug gang activity, we knew the players, the most violent people, or the people whose names were coming up. We knew where they lived, we knew what cars they were driving, we knew their phone numbers, we knew their girlfriends. And so when we did, with that intel all being gathered in one place, we knew of parties that were coming up. We knew there were beefs between two groups of people because informants were telling that there were things happening. We get related into a gang meeting and get spread out. My understanding is they're no longer doing those gang meetings. Some of that intel is still being gathered at the Fusion Center by an intel officer at APD, but there's no communication between the units to work those crimes. And so the way it was explained to me by the homicide detectives is when they had that information and when they had the intel about who knows who, who's related to who, it was much faster to solve these crimes. So when you don't know who the girlfriends are, that where they live, their phone numbers, the cars, those detectives have to start from scratch.
Yes.
And try to find all that information on their own rather than going to the gang intel officer or the people who were using those informants and get that information from them. So every single investigation starts from scratch.
Yep. Senator Costello.
Thank you. My question actually segues from yours, and that's about the specialized training. And we hear that we're seeing a loss of police officers because they get offers elsewhere and they leave Alaska or leave Anchorage. And can you talk about the impact of that on someone who's trained and then once they're gone, the dollars invested in that individual we don't see the benefit of that.
Sure. I mean, us recruiting qualified candidates is becoming more and more difficult every day. And so what we need to do is be able to recruit these officers, but more importantly, once we recruit the officers, we need to be able to retain them. And one of the issues that we're having right now is we're obviously having a problem recruiting, but retaining those officers as well. Put a little plug in here for our House Bill 90 and I think Senate Bill 83 that's coming up. What we really would like to see is a defined benefit program for public safety to give those new officers a reason to stay here 20 years or 25 years and not take the training and experience and the money that we've spent on them and go somewhere else and be a police officer. One of the problems we're having right now is that when I hired on, I signed up to do a career of at least 20 years here, probably 25 years. Now this has turned into a job rather than a career. And if something better comes along that has a defined benefit, these officers are leaving to take advantage of that, some of them.
Senator Costello.
And do you do exit interviews then so that you know the reason that you're losing officers?
The union does exit interviews, yes.
Thank you.
And we'll have a representative later. Please continue.
I'd like to share a couple other numbers with you that you're not going to see on the Uniform Crime Report or in statistics. And those are other arrest numbers at the APD for officer-initiated activity. And you've probably seen a common theme of mine with the officer-initiated activity because I believe that when officers have time to be proactive, crime goes down. And you're going to see those numbers that happens. And so these are another more arrest numbers at the Anchorage Police Department. So prostitution and vice, which is what our vice unit does, is prostitutes and vice. In 2009, they had 206 arrests. In 2014, they had 29 arrests. Pretty drastic reduction in arrest for prostitution. And then some of these are misdemeanors, but I think that they need to be highlighted. Driving under the influence. In 2009, we had 2,216 arrests. In 2014, we had 1,056. And again, we can't put numbers on how many lives would be saved or could be saved if we had arrested 1,000 more people for driving under the influence. But I think it's fair to say that a few of those would have gotten into accidents and potentially hurt somebody. Liquor law violations. In 2009, we had 926 arrests. In 2014, we had 197 arrests. Under 21, and I'm bringing that up because I think that's something that we should all be weary of, is our kids that are drinking underage. And under 20, this minor consuming alcohol, but some of these numbers also are over-serving or something like that in a bar. So in 2009, we had 459 arrests, and in 2013, we had 96 arrests. Traffic citations. This is the core of what police officers are supposed to do. I mean, we're trained early on that the more contacts you have with the public, the more often you are to find someone that doesn't have a license, doesn't have insurance, has a gun, is up to no good, doesn't have a license, those kind of things. In 2009, we wrote 45,361 citations. In 2013, which is the numbers I could come up with, we had 22,818 citations. We've had about a 60% reduction in traffic citations. The red light tickets alone are cut in half.
Wow.
And then calls for service, and I want to define that a little bit because everybody hears this call for service number. So calls for service are not only just numbers that the citizens call in and tell you, hey, there's a rape, there's a theft, there's these type of things, but calls for service are also officer-initiated activities. Those show up as calls for service. In 2009, we had 296,636 calls for service. In 2013, we had 239,765. And so I gave you those numbers because I think that's an important way of determining how proactive policing, because these are all things that are officer-initiated activities, has reduced.
Yes. And
just on that, I'll just say, just in talking to constituents in my district, they don't even bother to call the police anymore. I have people tell me they've called the police 4 or 5 times over break-ins, over robberies, over shootings in their neighborhood. And they don't even get anyone coming by. And I know it's not your fault. I know you guys are short-staffed. But I think that's probably a big reason why you're seeing the drop in the calls and service.
Absolutely. I'm going to touch a little bit on the PERF report, the Police Executive Research Forum. I'm sure you've all heard that being thrown out there. Maybe Mayor Sullivan will talk about that later. But in 2010, the municipality contracted with PERF to do a evaluation of the Anchorage Police Department's resources and take a look at how they were being allocated and make some suggestions on how they could be better allocated.
Can we get a copy of that?
I have it on a thumb drive. It's available on the municipal website.
Okay, thank you.
At that time, the Anchorage Police Department's goal was to go to community-oriented policing, and they made a goal of 40% unallocated time for community policing. And so I'll define that unallocated time a little bit for you. So the time that a police officer goes to a call is allocated time.
Okay.
The unallocated time is the administrative time that it takes for him to write a report regarding that, training, those kind of things, traffic stops, and officer-initiated activity. We actually have when you're on the radio and I'm OI, 1070, so that's a traffic stop. OI means I'm initiating that myself.
Yes.
I'm OI 1150. That means I'm going to go to a park, a business, something like that, and make sure the doors are locked or that the park's clear of kids drinking or no good after hours. And so that's unallocated time. And the goal at that time was 40% unallocated time so that these police officers could do that. I talked to several police officers in the last week. I saw a traffic unit. All of these people have essentially no unallocated time to do these officer-initiated activities. You know, our patrol officers are now being tasked with doing felony-level theft investigations in addition to that. So they're essentially running call-to-call, writing the report, going to another a call. And so they don't have time to do a lot of traffic stops, officer-initiated drug activity, and those type of things.
Yes, Senator Casella.
Thank you. And I have done a police ride-along, as I'm sure many of us here have, and I was interested in the reporting requirements and was curious whether or not has it gotten more onerous? I mean, are we seeing that you're having to do more reporting, and, or does that happen later where the officer has to remember certain things and then writes down their report later?
Well, I think that, I think that's probably done differently, maybe by shift or how busy you are. I can tell you these mid-shift officers that are working at 11 o'clock at night until 8 in the morning are not taking time to write their police report right after the event takes place. And so they're going to one call, taking notes, storing the memory the best they can, and moving on to the next call. And sometimes being broke from a less important call to go to a more important call. And so oftentimes in the middle of the early morning hours, once day shift hits the streets, that's when they use their time to do administrative duties like reports, court time, and those kind of things.
Thank you.
So I'm going to give you some staffing numbers because I know that that's probably one of the things that's going to be addressed. In 2009, we had 414 sworn officers. That was our all-time high of how many sworn officers we had. In 2010, when the PERF report was generated, we had 374 officers. Actually, at that time, they recommended we go to 456 officers if we wanted to reach that 40% unallocated time. Mm-hmm. We went from the 374 in 2010 to a low of 321 sworn in June of 2014 with an academy of 17 trying to get cut loose. So bottom line is, how do we fix it? Increase staffing. It seems like a policing 101. I hope that the information that I gave you illustrates how important it is that we have enough unallocated time that we can do officer-initiated activities, and that we can bring back the special assignment vice units, those proactive units that do crimes that aren't reported to the FBI as major crimes. But I think that we can all reasonably deduct that if we reduce those type of crimes and we get those that element of the society in jail, they're not going to be out there committing theft, larceny, burglary, murder, robbery, and homicide, those kind of things.
Excellent. And Detective Bell, as you wrap up, will you stay in the room?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. And
so
I know
bring
you
mentioned
the ride-along. I encourage you all to get out for a ride-along the next time you're in Anchorage.
Thank you.
Right. If you haven't done it.
Okay. Any further questions for Detective Bell? Okay, we'll move to Commissioner Gary Folger next. Thank you so much, Detective. We appreciate it. And there may be follow-up questions. That's why I asked you to stay. Commissioner, welcome. Can you just put your name on the record?
Good afternoon. My first name is Gary. Last name is Folger. I'm the Commissioner for Public Safety.
Yes. Welcome. Do you have prepared remarks today?
I do want to talk a little bit about this task force that Chief Muni had put together. I do want to say that we're partners in this. We do have some of our personnel assigned to this. One of the things the detective talked about was the Fusion Center. They are partners with us in on this Fusion Center. And you know, what we see going on in Anchorage is something that is very predictable, that can go to like the Kenai, the Mat-Su. It's a microcosm. So
can you expand on that further? That's essentially what we want to know is, you know, as the commissioner and for those watching or here, you know, you have your Anchorage Police Department. There are individual police departments throughout the state, but the Department of Public Safety, which you oversee, is our state troopers and our state department. And so obviously the largest community in the state has had this uptick. I'm certain that it's been a concern of yours. I want to hear why it's a concern of yours, how you see those crimes affecting the rest of the state. What are your thoughts about what Detective Bell said with respect to them being drug-related, and expand on your initial thought, if you would, Commissioner.
As Americans and Alaskans, we value human life. That's one of the tenets that we stand on. Yeah. And it's human nature, anytime we see a headline or hear in the news of a death, I think one of the first things we think about is, do we know him?
Yeah.
Do we know who this person is?
Right.
And then, you know, if it's something that, or someone that we don't know, we might blow it off a little bit. Or if it's something or someone that we know, we pay more attention. Or when there's a loss of innocent life, you know, let's say there's a shootout and some innocent people get, those are things that we value. Not to say that any lesser when there's crime folks involved in it. So as a commissioner, one of the biggest challenges I think I face is providing rural law enforcement.
Okay.
Because what we see going on in urban areas eventually will spread.
Okay.
You know, the drugs, it doesn't matter. And to investigate or to help along takes these specialized units.
Okay.
You know, social media drives it to a large degree. It's just the pace of society in general is going faster and faster, and it's you know, to the point, can we keep up? You know, do we throw more resources at it? And as a manager, it's a juggling act sometimes. You know, like you said earlier, a few years ago, the sex trafficking was a big thing. Predictive policing, I think someone mentioned that. Those are models that we look at. You know, there are vendors that, you know, can say to you, next Tuesday night, you know, at the North Pole Bakery, there might be a burglary based on past stats. And so those are things that we look at. Now getting back to the, like, the homicide rate in Alaska, I did a little research before I came over here, and one of the most interesting things I read was one of the biggest upticks in homicide in America in general was right after World War II.
Mm.
I think our guys were coming home. And then if you look at Alaska in general, the 70s and 80s were some pretty high numbers. The population was going up. We know we had a pipeline boom.
Yeah.
But in the last decade or so, the homicide rate overall in Alaska has gone down. Again, any loss of one human life is something that we value. So.
And so, and on that point, how do you respond to the uptick between 2009 and 2015?
I think it's, I think to look at the police in general and say, can you come up with an answer? I don't think we can. You know, it's a part of a three-legged stool. You know, the enforcement part of it, the prevention part, you know, social programs. I think overall, to make a short answer, society in general, societal norms.
And so, and as that, a great point, because you're the Commissioner of Public Safety, so you get up every day and have to deal with the society you're dealt with. The Commissioner of Education, the Commissioner of Health, they're all a part of that, right? Helping to shape, especially at early ages, these human beings that grow up and live in our civilization. So we could spend hours here talking about that. But specifically, right here today, as the Commissioner of Public Safety, what recommendations would you have based on what you heard Detective Bell speak about and based on your knowledge of what's happened in the largest community of our state for what we do going forward?
I have to wear two hats on this.
Okay, and that's
first
fair.
First part of me is the little boy in me that was the policeman.
Yes.
You know, the street level. You know, we've always wondered what those managers did up there. You know, and then the other hat, the manager hat. You know, we're allocated a certain amount, and we do the very best that we can. It's almost like from one fire to the next.
If you were king for a day, take your manager hat off.
Again, I will go back to the fact that it's not just the police alone. It's intervention, prevention, and enforcement.
Excellent. Senator Machicki.
Commissioner, welcome. Thanks for being here. I'm looking at the uptick numbers on the UCR for Anchorage. I know it's not isolated to Anchorage. And your department is largely intermingled. I think that's the best way to describe it. And I think about the Kenai. I mean, we have our municipal departments, like Anchorage does, much, much smaller scale, but seeing similar activity. What can we do better together on sharing information to make Alaska an extremely unpleasant place for bad guys to live?
One of the things the detective talked about, again, putting on the little guy hat, is the interaction between police agencies. And I think two areas that we've kind of stood up in the last few years is one is the Fusion Center, where there are some rules when you capture intelligence on folks, and so there's some very pretty good guidelines that we have to follow. Again, it is a place where information comes and goes. And the second part is whenever we can partner together, it goes a whole lot further when you know. Knowledge is power.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it. And then the other thing that we stood up inside of public safety in the last few years is what we call ARMS, the Alaska Records Management System. It's,
okay.
For lack of a better word, it's the first time maybe computers started talking to each other. You know, I know what you did yesterday. If we stopped a car in Anchorage yesterday, the next trooper knows or the next police officer knows what happened. So.
And is that shared in the local police department level as well?
It's a program that's just been stood up. You know, we've been in it a little over a year, maybe closer to two. You know, there's cost involved in it, and so we've been sharing it with some of the smaller PDs because of their resource use, and we've met with APD. I think it's the wave of the future, you know, where we can be partners. Again, it's the IT world is a whole world unto itself. It's incredible.
Excellent. Anything further for Commissioner Folger? Okay, thank you so much, Commissioner. Okay, next we're going to go to Jake Metcalf. Is he online?
Okay. Hi, I'm here.
Okay, Jake, do you have prepared testimony and put your name on the record?
Sure. My name is Jake Metcalf. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Safety Employees Association. We represent law enforcement, sworn and unsworn employees around the state of Alaska.
Excellent. And do you have prepared testimony today?
I wanted to follow up on the testimony that went before me. I wanted to tell the committee through you, Madam Chairman, that we represent the state troopers from trooper up to sergeant level, and we represent court service officers. We represent various municipal police departments around the state, including Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau, Fairbanks, Soldotna, Dillingham, and Unalaska. So we have about 700 to 800 members in our union that work all over the state of Alaska. Some of the concerns that we see, I think I'll echo what the commissioner said and what Officer Bell testified to. One of the biggest concerns we have is the fact that cuts are taking place and there's been no growth. I've been in my position since 2009. Our membership has been static during that time. I've really not seen any growth, so to speak, in the time that I've been here since 2009 of our membership. There have been people added and people subtracted from departments. Our seniority list, for example, at the Department of Public Safety for troopers has pretty much stayed the same. What we see is not any growth in public safety, but we see also a growth in population. If you look, University of Alaska back in 2014 did a study on the ratio of law enforcement sworn officers to citizens. Alaska was below the national ratio by quite a bit. I've seen statistics where there should be 370 sworn officers for each 100,000 of the population. By that standard, we should have about 2,500 sworn police officers in the state. We're down around 1,500 at the maximum. I'd say we're probably below that from the same University of Alaska statistics that came out back in August of 2014.
Jake, would you be willing to forward that on to the committee? My apologies. Would you be willing to forward that on to our committee as well?
Sure.
Thank you.
Another statistic that I think is important and also a report that I think the committee should take a look at least from a statewide perspective, is the Indian Law and Order Commission report. It came out in 2000 and 13 has a whole chapter on public safety and law enforcement in Alaska. It's very educational, gives a statewide, mostly rural perspective of law enforcement. One statistic that they mention in their report is that the Alaska Department of Public Safety officers have primary responsibility for law enforcement in rural Alaska. They provide 1 to 1.4 field officers per million acres. They have about approximately 370 officers that cannot serve on a 24/7 basis, so the actual ratio of officers to territory is much lower. Mm. And then they cited a quote from the Department of Public Safety that officers are often hampered by delayed notification, long response distance, and the uncertainties of weather and transportation. And I think, you know, any of us that have been around Alaska for a while understand that that's an issue. So, you know, we have a whole problem here. You know, in Anchorage, of course, is the largest village in Alaska. You know, the problems that we talked about earlier today, they bleed out to these other communities and to these other parts of the state. I spent 7 years as a prosecutor in Bethel. Most of the drugs and you know, the real problem was alcohol. Most of that came from Anchorage. So, you know, there's definitely a corresponding cause and effect. So what happens at Anchorage happens around the state, like the commissioner said. One other sort of statistic I'd like to share with you is I looked at our seniority list at the Department of Public Safety. We have 30 members eligible for retirement between now and next year, September of 2016. Those are the most experienced state troopers that are employed at the Department of Public Safety. That only includes our members. There are management people in command that I know are also eligible to retire. So when you look at that, you know, in the next year, about 10% of troopers are eligible to retire. So you have that factor looming over law enforcement in this state. It costs a lot of money to train people up. It takes a long time for people to get trained up to take those jobs. And as Officer Bell testified, it's harder to recruit nowadays. You know, we see that both on the local and state level. And for the reasons that have already been discussed, retention is a problem when we see that in our organization. So I just wanted to bring forward those facts, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Excellent. Questions for Mr. Metcalf? Yes, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, Jake. I have a couple questions for you. One is, what is the, you may not have this off the top of your head, but what's the average length of service of your 700 to 800 sworn officers, sworn and unsworn officers right now?
I don't have that in front of me. I mean, I could give you sort of an anecdotal idea, and I could try to get that for you too later. But, you know, we see, you know, there's a good number of people on. I think retirement's a problem in at least our bigger communities. For instance, you know, Juneau and Fairbanks are two of the larger communities we represent. We have an issue with people retiring in Fairbanks, so they're losing a lot of senior experienced folks there. You know, there are issues with retention there as well, so that's a concern. You know, Juneau has a you know, a pretty good range of experience, but you know, every time you lose someone experienced like that, you have to fill that position with a new person, and it takes, you know, about a year, if not longer, to get that person up to speed through the application process and the field training process. So there's a delay in that, and that can become burdensome for communities as far as having police departments are fully staffed.
Just to follow,
yes, absolutely, Senator Machicki.
Yeah, one more, Mr. Metcalf. Senator Costello asked about exit interviews from the department, and I have some experience with kind of larger pools of employees. And when I know a proportion of folks that, I mean, you can sort of measure the folks that are leaving and understand you've got a lot of folks that are in your ranks that are looking. Have you considered a survey just on the issue of retention? Have you considered a survey membership-wide to sort of understand what kinds of things might make the department more attractive?
Yes, we've considered that. You know, to be honest with you, we're a small organization, and you know, staffing is a concern for us. But one thing that we've looked at is, you know, internet surveys, and it, just a through technology, an easier way to survey people, and it's very important to us. So we've also looked at partnering with other organizations like ours to do that. So you know, we see that as an important tool to share with the state and the local governments where we have members.
Excellent point. I think, please let us know the follow-up on that. It's a great point, Senator Michiki. You know, to ask a survey as opposed to waiting till they leave midstream, are you looking? What factors would make you stay? Why are you looking? What are the things you're looking at so that we can remain competitive?
Yeah. And Madam Chair, I know that the employers do that in various communities around the state, you know, because they're interested in that, too, as a way of finding out what they need to do to keep people and maybe improve the situation. Not all employers survey, and not all employers survey the same way, but there are some departments that do that.
Senator Michiki, and wrap up?
Yeah, just to wrap up here, it's just when someone makes the decision to leave, sometimes they're justifying the reason for leaving with other things. They may not have been in there wholeheartedly, but there may be another opportunity that has less to do with the department than the external decision. I don't know, it's just something to think about. As managers, we're often, we think we understand our workforce, but I've seen by measuring that sometimes we can be way off base on what's good and what's not so good about our organization. I'd strongly encourage it, even in partnership with the Department of Public Safety, it may be a worthwhile exercise.
Excellent.
Senator, I agree, and thank you for that comment.
Thank you. Senator Costello.
Thank you. Jake, how serious a problem is the 10% eligibility for retirement?
Some of those members are at their 25-year mark or getting close to the 25-year mark where they'll have medical insurance if they're Tier 2. We don't have a lot of Tier 1 employees left. I think there's maybe you know, less than five of those in our, at least the Department of Public Safety members that we represent. So most people have to work 25 years to get the medical insurance. So a lot of people stay for 25 years. A good number of these people are eligible for 20. I know a lot of people that are leaving at 20 because they have a spouse that has insurance or they just want to get out. I just talked to a member of ours at the Fairbanks Police Department that is retiring at 20. So it varies, you know, and then people stay because they like their career, so they don't always retire when they're eligible, and we've had, you know, members that like their job and want to stay and work, so they don't all leave, but, you know, it's definitely a concern that is out there in the Department of Public Safety and all the local departments that we represent, and, you know, the other concern is that if cuts continue to happen, then they have to work more, and sort of the stress of that of the position and the, you know, working more for less, basically, because you don't have the staff to do the work that you've done before, has its effect. So you know, that's also a consideration that comes in and has to be thought about as positions get cut.
Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Jake, for coming before the committee today. And you hit on some of the points that I was going to talk about, and that is vacancy rate or retirement rates and the new generation recruitment. But one of the things that might be telling outside of bargaining contracts, the quality of life issues, grievances filed that you guys have to deal with might be an indicator to us. Is that something that you can share with us, or is that not available?
Well, I don't know if I can. I'm not thinking of any grievances about quality of life that we have, but I can tell you issues that come up that could eventually rise to the level of a grievance or a contract violation. Mm-hmm. Everybody has grievances. It's oftentimes not a contract violation, but one of the issues that we see, at least with rural troopers, is the cost of living. And sort of the isolation and the expense of going back and forth if they need to go somewhere. So that's an issue. One thing that the department has done that we believe is helpful is in a number of communities they're working a two-on, two-off shift, and that has been popular with some of our members. And I see that as something that we continue to do if we can, if the department can afford to do that and the state can afford to do it. It gets people out to the communities, and then they come back to where they live and have some time off. The other sort of issue that I see, at least here in Anchorage, where I live and where I'm a taxpayer, there's an effort and a talk for more community policing, and part of community policing is police officers working, getting to know people in the areas that they patrol, getting the public to know them, to have a relationship with the public. What I hear as a resident of Anchorage is communities and neighborhoods around the city want that. That takes staffing to do. It's a little harder to do in rural Alaska because you don't have as many people in these posts. But as a prosecutor, I saw the most effective police officers being those officers that invested in the community, liked living there, got to know the people trusted them. If we can have more of that, I think it's better for law enforcement in rural Alaska. I think you also need to have well-trained, certified police officers providing law enforcement in rural Alaska, and that's part of community policing. Whether it's possible, whether we can afford it, is what we have to plan for and look at, I think, as a state. But I think it's very effective. And one thing Senator Costello brought up, I think, was the CompStat issue, which is algorithms or data that the police departments in large urban areas use to determine where they're going to place their staffing in order to reduce crime in high crime areas. That's worked in communities like Los Angeles and New York, but it requires sufficient staffing, and then it requires the data and the data entry and the IT equipment to do it. But that's had an effect in those communities, and I've talked to people who have used it and they swear by it. So the sort of modern technology-driven solutions are something that we need to look at. Whether we can use it, whether we can afford it, is something that I think you have to figure out through more research. But it's something that has worked in other places, and maybe it works here, maybe it doesn't.
Thank you very much, Mr. Metcalf. Okay, we appreciate your testimony. I've got members that have agreed to stay to 3:15, a few of them, some have to leave. I have two people left. I have Chris Aldridge from Anchorage Corrections and some discussion about assaults, rapes, and gangs and how he believes that interrelates. And then I have the mayor. So I'm going to go to the mayor next. Knowing that there are some people that have to leave to give deference to the mayor. So, Mayor Dan Sullivan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you. Well, appreciate the opportunity. One of the things I wanted to do at the start is thank the committee for your interest in something that we all agree is the top priority for any public official, and that is making sure that you have safe communities. I wanted to start off by just talking a little bit about the numbers, since that was something that certainly caught everyone's attention. I think you were looking at the chart that Detective Bell provided that showed the UCR index crimes 2009 through 2013. And while the overall number looks, as Senator Machicki pointed out, you know, looks like a big uptick, what I would ask the members to do, Madam Chair, is look from 2009 to 2013, and you'll see that five of the seven categories have shown either a decline or a flat, which, you know, these are the number of crimes reported. So murder, flat. Forcible rape is up, and as was explained, partly due, of course, to the new definition. Robbery, down. Aggravated assault, down. Burglary, down. We did see the increase in larceny theft, and then the motor vehicle theft essentially flat. So you've got really good numbers in terms of your overall categories, with one or two that are not the trends you want to see, and, of course, with the rape, the new definition certainly led to those numbers. We also provided a chart which shows the historical crime trends, and I think this is important because one of the things in law enforcement that's very important is how are your crime statistics trending, because that tells you where your community is really at. And once again, I would point out that the overall number for 100,000 is down compared to the previous 5 years before we came on board, and five of the seven categories are also down compared to the previous 5 years. So that's actually a really good trend, and that's what you want to see. The purpose of the meeting today, I know, was brought about because of what we saw in January with an unusual amount of shootings.
Yes.
When your crime is trending, you know, the way that that we've just presented to you, you know, a good trend overall, and you do see an anomaly like this, you see a spike, it catches our attention just like it catches the attention of neighborhoods and the media and elected officials. So one of the first things we did is we said, you know, well, we got to do something about it. We want to make sure we apply the right resources to find out, A, is this something symptomatic? Is it insidious? It is, you know, as a new cartel moved up here from the States or something. And so we put together the task force, including the FBI, the Drug Enforcement Administration Agency, the ATF, you know, the marshals, the parole folks, the troopers, and, of course, our APD officers. And quite frankly, that focused effort with the communication and information shared between the different agencies really hit this thing hard and hit it effectively. You've got, I think, a sheet in front of you as well that shows the case statistics so far. 26 arrests have been made, 7 vehicles served, 40 guns seized, cash, drugs, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, the task force accomplished what it was supposed to, but it has not been broken up, by the way. I think I heard Detective Bell say that it was no longer together. It is actually still working these cases. So, good results. Again, we look at what happened in January as an anomaly. We've already seen February and March, you know, that spike decline dramatically. One of the statistics that I like sharing with folks, too, and this, of course, the statistics you had in front of you go through 2013. One statistic that we know for sure for 2014, because it's the easiest one to track, is we have the lowest number of murders in 20 years. So, you know, 2014 looks like, you know, the statistics are going to continue overall the good trend. But one thing that people need to realize, too, is that there are fewer crimes reported today in Anchorage, Alaska, than 30 years ago, and we're a 120,000-person greater city. That is a great statistic. It shows that overall we are a safe community, and the chief has said many times, Chief Mew, that if you're not involved in drugs or if you're not abusing alcohol, your chance to be involved in a violent crime are pretty minimal in Anchorage, Alaska. So we're pleased about the overall trend. We're concerned about the spike. We think we've taken the right steps towards dealing with that spike, and we're seeing the direct results of that. A couple other things. We agree with virtually all the speakers about staffing levels. You guys right now are going through a big challenge regarding budget.
Yep.
Well, I went through that big challenge, too, when I came into the office in 2009. And when you're facing a multi-million dollar deficit, and I know in your case it's got another zero or two on the end of it,
yep.
you have to take some steps to make sure that your budget is in balance while at the same time focusing on your priorities. So as soon as we had the capability financially to start adding back to the police department, you know, we've been doing it. We had an academy in 2011. We had academy in 2013, two academies in 2014. I was just yesterday handing out the graduation certificates to 23 new officers. We have a new academy starting in May. It's got 28 people. We're not having trouble recruiting people for our academies. I think we had one academy that was below our normal level, but we're getting 25 to 30 people in these academies. That's a typical full academy. So I think people are still wanting to join this very fine police department. They're graduating. They're in field training now. And so we're confident that by the end of this, we have a new academy in May and then another one in November. If we get the number of successful new officers out of those academies that we're anticipating, another one in 2016, we'll be up right around the 400 person level in terms of our sworn officers. And that puts us really on the track towards our community policing goals. Keep in mind, when we came into office, we were the ones that commissioned the PERF report, knowing that we would probably have challenges in the years ahead adding to our staffing, or actually even maintaining a staff level with known attrition. So we wanted to ask the Police Executive Research Forum, are we being as efficient as we can, knowing that we may not be able to expand numbers or maybe even see them reduce, but it's as equally as important as number of officers is how you deploy those officers. And the PERF report made some suggestions which we have implemented. We do have our patrol officers on regular beats now under the command of a command sergeant. They are doing just exactly what was suggested. They're working the same areas. They're getting to know the business people, the kids. They get to know who they can get good information from, and they get to know who the troublemakers are. That's been invaluable. And so our goal, of course, is to expand that. We do want to get up, like I say, over the 400-person level and really expand our community policing efforts. But I think the good news in this story is that even with a smaller police department, our overall trend is lower than the trend 5 years before we came into office when there was more officers. So I think maybe we're a results-oriented organization here in the municipality. We don't look at just static numbers about how many do you think you should have. We look at the results we're getting from those we do have. And one thing the PERF report really suggested was, do not try and compare yourself to other cities. They've got X number per capita. You should have X number. Every city is different. We're not a greatly impoverished city outside of a Baltimore or something that's got major problems. We're sound economically. We've got one of the best job markets in the entire nation. So, you know, we're able to be effective even though we may not have the highest numbers that that some people might suggest. So, but again, our commitment is to grow the force. Again, I had the privilege yesterday of graduating an academy. A new one starts in May. With that, the other statistic I'll throw out there, and this shows the challenge that we have in maintaining a certain staffing level. In 2003, the budget for the police department was $45 million. In 2014, the budget for the police department was $95 million. So in a period of time when inflation grew at about 30% over that cumulative period, our police department budget more than doubled. So there's been no lack of commitment monetarily to the police department. So just want to make sure people are aware. We're not cutting back on APD or the fire department for that matter. In fact, their budgets have continued to grow. The challenge has been the cost per employee has risen dramatically. And when personnel gets to an expensive level, sometimes you can't have as many of them as you like. But again, because of our good solid financial management, we're now able to expand, and that's what we're doing. So gladly, Madam Chair, answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and I appreciate that. I think, you know, it's a challenge we have with the school district at the state level. We fund education. We don't get to appropriate it. We know the health care costs have gone up, et cetera, and so you get fewer bodies. Appreciate that. I just have one question for you. I like the numbers going back up again. I think that's excellent. Has the task force decided to make a recommendation to increase the number of police officers in the vice unit, the gang unit and the special investigations unit. That was some of the testimony that we heard from Detective Bell at the outset, and I wondered what the thoughts were from the task force on that.
Yeah, the task force will be making those kinds of recommendations. It was an interagency force designed to solve a particular problem. Those sort of recommendations will come from the professionals in the police department. The chief and his deputy chiefs will look at areas where they can assign personnel, where they can be most effective. Keep in mind, there never was a gang unit, per se. It was the special assignment unit. Did a variety of things, including gangs. We had one person in gang intel. That person has just recently been reassigned because of challenges we had with the performance. But as we were able to grow the department, absolutely we'll be able to do a better job of making sure that any areas where we feel we're deficient, that we're not able to do the job we want to do, that's why we're adding to the department.
Excellent. Thank you. Questions? Yes. Senator Ellis, and then Senator Michiki, and then Senator Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Mayor, thank you for being with us today. Former Senator Fred Dyson and I talked our colleagues here for almost over a decade about the coming epidemic of heroin, opioid addiction, and all the reasons. I won't go into all of that, but when I do police ride-arounds, the police officers talk about the drug cartels that import the black market marijuana along with meth and black tar heroin. So people get addicted to OxyContin and oxycodone, can't afford it, and then they go on to black tar heroin. So the importation is pretty significant and has reached, in my opinion, or my information, corners all over the state. Do you hear that from other mayors at AML or when you communicate with other communities? You know, you'll hear that there's a spike in Mat-Su or on the Kenai Peninsula, or things have gotten horrible in Bethel with black tar heroin from the Mexican cartel bringing in that drug and other drugs. Do you hear the same thing across the state when you talk to other local officials?
Through the chair, Senator Ellis, we have heard some of that. You know, I attend every year the Conference of Mayors, and we share these exact sort of data points about what we're seeing in our communities and what kind of information can we share to put a stop to it. The task force, the arrest that APD made in conjunction with the task force yielded about 285 grams of meth, 53 grams of heroin, very little cocaine, more marijuana, and some morphine, but meth and heroin were the two largest seizures. And I think, as was stated, I think by someone else, what happens in Anchorage is a reflection sometimes of what's going on around the state. So I think we would all share our concern about just exactly what you mentioned, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Michiki, and then Senator Costello.
Mayor Sullivan, Mayor Sullivan and I were mayors together, so I understand the challenges of keeping costs down. I think he's done a good job, and I've actually always been a fan. But the point that I was making, Mayor, and perhaps you can comment on this, is regionally, we're obviously seeing an increase in drug-related crimes, and you start seeing it in the burglaries and some of the thefts, and always has the potential to become more violent, and you've had a few of those lately. Just on a regional basis, and I say that goes from Fairbanks to the southern tip of the Kenai, do you have any ideas on some things that we can do collaboratively to, again, I say it this way because I think it's what we need to shoot for, to just make life unpleasant for folks that want to deal and import drugs in our communities?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, you know, it's a combination of factors. Obviously, we've got to have good intel and make arrests. We've got to have our criminal justice system, when they get to court, make sure that the penalties are stiff enough that it either gets these people off the street for a long time or certainly deters them from ever doing this sort of thing again. You know, we've got challenges at every stage of criminal justice, whether it's having enough resources to make the initial arrest, or having enough beds in a prison to house people doing bad things. So it's a holistic question, and I just think that if it really is job number one in our communities, it obviously has to be our focus of how we fund and where we assign our resources. So I don't have a magic wand answer for you, but We work it every day. And again, our commitment has been, you know, whenever we are able to put the resources together to add to our department and to make it more proactive, we're getting there.
Excellent. Senator Costello.
Thank you, Mayor Sullivan. What is the task force tasked with doing?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, really it's an information sharing organization. Oftentimes, someone who touches one end of law enforcement will also possibly have another. We assume sometimes that all these agencies just regularly communicate with each other, but you know, they all have their own silos sometimes. And so what it does is break down those silos and make sure that there's communication. We track where the crimes are happening, what names that we're getting information about. Are they appearing elsewhere? Are these people who are violating parole, perhaps? Is it somebody that there's a warrant out for that the marshals might have information about? That sharing of information is hugely important. And usually it's ultimately the APD that makes the, you know, the ultimate arrest as we get this information and we can make a case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Any further questions for the mayor? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, for taking time out of your busy day to call in. Any suggestions for us on the legislative level? I think that was what we're really striving for here is how can we help? And any legislation you see or any small capital projects you think we need to be doing or changes we need to be doing to help out?
You know, through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, you know, the state over the years, as has the federal government, been successful with grants on for specific things, for example, for overtime, so that we can work these cases and pay for the overtime sometimes necessary. Sometimes we receive grants specifically for drug units so they can, you know, specialize and make sure that they're really focusing. And it sounds like, you know, from Detective Bell and others that I've certainly talked to, that, you know, if we're going to increase our efforts to stop the street-level drug trafficking, you know, having grant money for either overtime or adding some specialists, we would not say no.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Mayor. We appreciate it and look forward to any further information that comes out of the task force. It would be excellent if you guys could forward that to the Senate Judiciary Committee so we put that in the file as a part of this dialogue.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and we will certainly do that, and thank you for the forum today. It's obviously a very, very important subject, so yes. We appreciate your interest.
Yep, thank you very much. Okay, last person we have, and then we'll wrap up, is Chris Aldridge. And the focus of Chris's testimony is what he's seeing in the Anchorage Correctional Facility. So, Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. If you just put yourself on the record and offer your testimony.
Okay, my name is Christopher Aldridge, and I'm not representing any certain organization here. I am a correction officer, too, with the state of Alaska. I've been employed there since November 2006. When I first started working in corrections, I was surprised to see that inside the walls we had people of all colors sitting together, and no matter what affiliation you had, everyone was eating, playing, drinking, sleeping, without having, you know, too many problems. And as time went by, there was a shift that happened where inmates started self-segregating, and then we started seeing gang activity and gang recruitment within the walls. Gangs such as the Caucasian Kings, Native Brotherhood, the Crips, the Bloods, Black Gorilla Family, and, you know, the Serranos, and different gangs started cropping up, and problems started happening. We started to see a rise of assaults, not only on inmate, but staff on staff as well. Mm. Inmate assaulting staff. We started seeing rapes, more extortion, whether it be of food or money. And the gang's influence reaches out beyond the walls, not just within the walls, but on the outside. There were threats that were made to staff and staff being harassed by groups from within. As we look at what's happening there, it seems that since the inmates have returned back from Colorado, we noticed an increase as they brought back some of the habits that they learned while out of state. Plus, we've seen an influx of people coming from out of state who are bringing the gang mentality here to our state. Being incarcerated in the state of where we are in corrections right now, they're able to do their recruiting, and we're seeing a rise of that happening, especially with young influence or easily influenced inmates that have been coming into the facility. And it's difficult to be able to have control like we did, say, back in 2006. There was enough officers to be able to have control of the mods and, you know, run the jail a little bit more efficiently. But since we've had a decrease, we've noticed that inmates started to stay into groups as they started to feel unsafe within the facility. They started to gather weapons. And, you know, that's been real troubling for me and real dangerous for us officers. And the reason why they're doing that is that without us being able to provide the secure environment that they once lived in, they're having to depend on each other for that type of security. And that's basically what I've noticed within the jail.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Chris. We appreciate all the work that you've done on this issue, and I know you've been in touch with lots of the members of the Judiciary Committee, in your concern about the reduction in staffing and how the impact has been felt on the Anchorage jail. So I appreciate that. Questions for Mr. Chris Aldridge? Okay. Well, thank you. We appreciate your testimony. And any further comments from members today? If not, we'll go ahead and wrap up. Appreciate the information, and we'll just continue to dialogue on it and bring it back up again, follow up with the task force, see how the new academies are working in, communicate with our commissioner. Again, that notion that it seeps out, there's a statewide impact, and we just want to be on top of it. So appreciate you being here as well today, Commissioner. And with that, we're adjourned.